Hello, I'm Cheryl Alleen. This is number 0487, the Stuff File Program, with Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0487. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, science writer Andrew Vizekas, the night sky guy, talks about several recent space exploration items, plus what he's looking forward to in 2019.
One of the big stories that I'm really looking for is the private space industry, what it's going to be doing. This is kind of a make or break year for the return of human spacecrafts on American soil. The United States is going to see, looks like, a real race amongst its commercial industry between like SpaceX, Boeing, Orbital. There's a whole slew of different companies now that are vying to be the first private company to taxi humans to and from space.
Blogger Zap Actiondauer travels around the U.S. searching for restaurants that over the years have been orphaned by a parent head office and went out of business. This was a trek that all started out of nostalgia.
When I was growing up in central Kentucky, there was a restaurant chain there that I was quite fond of. It was called G.D. Ritzy, and it was kind of a Art Deco-themed burger joint. They also made their own ice cream on site, and they all disappeared around the time I was in maybe first grade. A little while later, I discovered that there were still a handful open in other towns, and that trip I made about a year ago was to one of those G.D. Ritzy's locations just to relive a little bit of my childhood.
Stuart Nullman is in with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman, and it's that time of the year again on Book Banter, finding the best gift books for Christmas. And I have three good selections. So before you head to the local bookstore, check us out here on the Stuff File Program.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0487, was my niece, Cheryl Alleen. She's also a real estate agent. Thank you very much, Cheryl, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File Program. Love you. A program that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Now, occasionally, at this time of year, you get one or two Scrooges who don't enjoy the holiday spirit. Perhaps they believe that the Yuletide season starts too early, or that too many places are overly decorated with blaring music. It can be a little understanding. I mean, you know, the forced cheerfulness of retail workers and saccharine advertisements. Boy, even I get tired quickly seeing commercials with high-end cars covered in giant bows. Anyway, sometimes it's enough to make a person want to lock themselves in the house. Or, in the case of one South Carolina man, to take a more proactive approach to dealing with the frivolity and excess of the season. A more proactive approach, and also a lighter. A Somerville man is charged with arson after police say he burned down the Christmas decorations in a suburban Charleston neighborhood. Authorities arrested 29-year-old Cameron Lewis Bond after receiving an afternoon call about a person setting fire to the property of multiple neighbors. Police said Bond lit a snowman decoration that was in the front yard of one home. And isn't that a little bit of irony when you see a snowman ablaze? Anyway, Bond was detained for burning Christmas decor at another home when officers arrived. Somerville Fire Rescue were also attempting to put out a house fire that Bond allegedly set. According to Somerville police, Bond is said to have busted a garage window trying to light fire to the inside of another structure. Wow. You know, There are a lot of coal mines in South Carolina, but I don't know if they have enough coal for the lumps of it that they're going to need for this clown that he deserves in his stocking this year. Yeah. And while we're on Christmas and burning things, if the smell of Kentucky Fried Chicken roasting on an open fire appeals to you, you're in luck. KFC is offering an 11 herbs and spices fire log, saying it's the best way to make your house and your fire smell less like fire and more like chicken. The 5-pound fire log is available on the company's website and is limited to one per customer while supplies last. KFC says the $18.99 fire log can burn for up to 3 hours, but there are some warnings that go with it. It may result in cravings for fried chicken and attract hungry neighbors or bears. And even though it smells great, it's not safe to eat. You know, the fact that they have to warn people that a log meant to burn in the fireplace isn't safe to eat is a sad, sad, sad situation. I mean, logs have never been finger-licking good. Also, do you really want to attract bears or raccoons or squirrels to your house? Yeah. Guards at Her Majesty's Prison, Bullington in England, tracked a cell phone signal to a specific inmate's cell and searched it to find the contraband. 26-year-old inmate Dylan Martin admitted he had a phone, but the guards wouldn't find it where they were looking. It was in his butt, he said. The jailers didn't quite buy Martin's defense, though. He claimed the phone wasn't his. What, did somebody else put it up there while he was sleeping or something? Anyway, the embedded phone book had numbers for friends and family stored on it, and Martin quickly pleaded guilty and was sentenced to 6 more months in prison. At least his family now knows why it takes so long for him to answer the phone. Gee, I wonder if the phone was set to vibrate. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, the Richland, Washington Fire Department asked on their Facebook page for information on 38-year-old Anthony Akers, who had an outstanding warrant. Now, usually, we put up the post and wait for some member of the public to call in with information or something useful, said Sergeant Michael Harrison. This time, though, it was Akers himself who replied. Calm down, the comment said. I'm going to turn myself in. The next day, the police posted, Hey, Anthony, we haven't seen you yet. Akers responded that he'd be there, but didn't show up again. Is it us? The department posted. We waited, but you didn't show. To which he responded, Dear RPD, it's not you, it's me. I obviously have commitment issues. I apologize for standing you up, but let me make that up to you. Thank you in advance to your response. If you are patiently giving me another chance with us, I know I don't deserve it. P.S. You're beautiful. Akers turned himself in the next day. Well, that's a touching, sweet story, isn't it? It'll never last, you know. I mean, I'm sure he feels like a prisoner in this relationship. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Andrew Vizekas, the night sky guy, is back on the show. He's here to talk about a few items in the news these days, including a Canadian in space and a Mars lander. Andrew is a member of the Royal Astronomical Society of Canada and the author of Star Trek, The Official Guide to Our Universe, The True Science Behind the Starship Voyages. He joins us on the line via Skype from right here in Montreal. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Peter.
Always a pleasure to have you on the program. Let's start off with the Canadian in space, David Saint-Jacques. He went up earlier this month. What is his mission? How long will he be up there?
Well, yeah, I mean, this is a big mission for the world, in that we're back in business of going back and forth from the International Space Station. So that's a big deal. After the aborted launch back in October, everybody was wondering what the problems were with the Soyuz launch system, and it looks like everything was solved. And it's a very reliable system with over 1,300 launches over the many decades. And sure enough, it's a workhorse, and it went back up. And for Canada, of course, this is a big deal. We're after a 5-year drought of not having any astronauts in space. David Saint-Jacques broke that drought. That was, by the way, 2013 with our singing astronaut Chris Hadfield.
Yes,
that was the guitar playing singing astronaut. Remember that? So he. So that was 5 years ago, hard to believe. And so David Saint-Jacques finally broke that drought. And he's up there for 6.5 months. And his mission is really, a lot of it is focused on medical kind of tests, looking at human adaptation to microgravity conditions. So long-term spaceflight adaptation of the human body. This is a big deal. It's also very near and dear to David's heart, because he's, of course, a practicing physician, and so he's very interested in figuring out how the body adapts over many months of being in microgravity. And this is very important, because this kind of work is a foundation for our plans to go beyond low Earth orbit. When talking about deep space missions of going to Mars, those are missions where it takes 6 to 9 months just one way to get to the red planet, and the entire missions can last many years. So understanding how the human body adapts to space, working and living 24 hours a day for months on end, is very important. And David is going to be doing a whole suite of experiments, many of them Canadian. He's already started, in fact, within the first week of after launching, he's already started working on these kind of experiments of trying to understand really how we can live in space in the future.
Speaking of going further afield than low orbit, the NASA Mars lander landed on the red planet, much to the joy of those in mission control. They were jumping around like children, excited children on Christmas morning when that landed. Your thoughts on the landing and the mission of the InSight lander?
Yeah, I mean, this is really the next step in our understanding of the red planet. And, you know, the InSight mission is sort of in a long lineup of missions that are really, really trying to understand the inner workings of the red planet too. And there's many practical sizes. It is a very fundamental science that InSight's doing, looking at giving basically the red planet a checkup of sorts. The first checkup it's had in its 4.5 billion years since it formed. But this kind of fundamental science of looking at Mars quakes, for instance, are have real practical applications of, for instance, we're looking at setting up future colonies, perhaps in lava tubes, in open large caverns on Mars, and understanding, how often and how severe tremors are. Ground tremors on Mars would, of course, be of great importance if we're going to set up any kind of colony inside of these kind of lava tubes. It has direct practical applications. So really, this kind of science that InSight's doing may not be as flashy as, for instance, what the Curiosity rover is doing with its cameras and robotic arms. It is a stationary lander, but it's really adding to the greater picture of our understanding of the neighboring world we call Mars.
And speaking of pictures and the excitement of those who are at the ground control, it was just late last week, that the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, using its super sharp high-resolution imaging science experiment camera, or HiRISE, got a picture of the InSight lander on the surface of Mars.
Yeah, I mean, this is really incredible. The photograph that you have to remember, this is taken, you know, a few hundred kilometers above the surface of Mars, this orbiter. a workhorse that's been there for many years now, actually spotted not just the lander, but also the discarded heat shield and parachute, all within a few hundred meters of each other on this vast lava plain that the InSight lander just sort of touched down on. So it's really incredible that we've got such kind of assets on around the planet, and this is really showing us that, you know, everything is amazing. What we've been able to do technologically is really is incredible.
Which reminds me, do we have anything, speaking of orbiters, do we currently have anything orbiting the moon? And if so, can any of the remnants of the previous missions be seen from any orbiter?
Oh, definitely. We've actually spotted the Apollo mission remnants from previous orbiters around the moon. And currently, too, there are orbiters. China has an orbiter actually now in place and is going to act as a very important relay station for the upcoming Chinese lander and rover that's going to touch down for the very first time on the far side of the moon. You have to remember, we always see the same face of the moon that's pointed towards Earth, but the far side of the moon, the opposite side, is really completely unexplored. We've never actually landed on it, and now in the next couple of weeks, the Chinese will have the very first lander in history, hopefully touching down with a rover as well. And we have a relay station, basically a satellite in orbit around the moon, that is going to relay that signal from the far side of the moon back to Earth.
Mm. Well, here we are near the end of 2018, so I'm just curious to know, in your opinion, what was the biggest news of the year from a space or a scientific point of view?
Oh my gosh, you're putting me on the spot. One story, it was an epic year with all kinds of things happening.
Okay, well, I'll ask it this way then. From your point of view, and I know you don't get jaded by what you do because you love it so much, but what made you say, oh, wow, this year?
Well, I think, funny enough, I think the one that really excited me so much was the Parker Solar Probe. This is one of those final destinations of the solar system that we've never explored before. And just a few weeks ago, we got a signal that this probe we launched a few months ago finally kind of reached in orbit around the sun and is starting to send us signals. I mean, this is literally touching the outer atmosphere of the sun. We've never gotten this close. It's 10 times closer than the planet Mercury. And it's something that I never imagined in my life that I would see us being able to build technology that could survive this kind of the most extreme environment of literally touching the sun. And the best is yet to come, too, because next year the orbits are even going to be lowered even more of the spacecraft, and it's going to be literally flying through the maelstroms or those firestorms of the sun. So it's absolutely amazing mission.
Well, you just partially answered my last question, and that is, what are you hoping for 2018? Or for 2019, rather.
2019. Oh my gosh. I think one of the big stories that I'm really looking for is the private space industry, what it's going to be doing. This is kind of a make or break year for the return of human spacecrafts to the on American soil. The United States is going to see, looks like, a real race amongst its commercial industry between like SpaceX, Boeing, Orbital. There's a whole slew of different companies now that are vying to be the first private company to taxi humans to and from space. and not to mention space tourism. We just heard about Virgin Galactic testing out its space plane. It's managed to go up up to the edge of space, and it's planning on taking the first space tourist in just a few months, but probably in the first quarter of 2019, we might see the first space tourist going on Virgin Galactic's much touted ferry system. So there's a lot of really cool things that are going to be happening in 2019.
Do you have your ticket?
Not yet. I don't know. I don't think I have enough air miles.
Ah, okay. Andrew,
still working on that.
Andrew, always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks for being on with us once again, and best of the holidays to you.
Yes, and same to all your listeners, and clear skies to everyone.
Andrew Fazekas, the night sky guy and author of Star Trek, the official guide to our universe, the true science behind the starship voyages. You can go to the website at thestufffile.com and check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0487, and you'll find links to either amazon.com or amazon.ca where you can order Andrew's book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File Program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. This is the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder. This broadcast is coming to you from upstairs. Get out of the house.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about orphaned franchise restaurants. Plus, Stuart Numlin will be in with a year-ender book banter. We do indeed have an Idiot of the Day coming your way a little later on, and more Stuff File news here on a program that is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher and TuneIn, and can also be heard via Google Play and iTunes. Just click on the Google Play or iTunes buttons located on the website at thestufffile.com. And whichever platform you listen to the program on, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site, because, as you know, I will greatly appreciate it. Let's get back to the stuff, shall we? An escape plot to blast a hole into the Alamance County Detention Center in North Carolina was thwarted when an inmate mailed the plans to the wrong person. A woman received a letter from the jail on December the 6th. Thinking it was a letter to her, she opened it. Really? Does she generally get a lot of mail from the prison? Anyway, inside she found a detailed drawing of the Alamance County Detention Center, instructions for making a bomb, and a plan for explosives to be planted on the south side of the detention center to create an escape route. That's when she alerted law enforcement. 43-year-old Sean Damian Castorini was already in the detention center serving time on a first-degree murder charge and now faces new charges for the plot. He allegedly conspired with 23-year-old Shannon Douglas Gerken and 24-year-old Dakota Lee Markick. The sheriff's office reports Gerken and Markick may have been followers of Castorina, whatever that means. If the bomb had gone off according to the mailed plans, it would have injured both other inmates and some of the administration. Detectives found additional evidence of the plot in Castorina's cell and conversations recorded on phones at the detention center. Castorina was charged with an attempt to escape a county jail, two counts of manufacturing and assembling a weapon of mass destruction, and four counts of felony conspiracy. Gerken and Markick were both charged with malicious use of an explosive to damage property. This is not Castorina's first escape attempt, by the way, according to the sheriff's office. He tried to escape from the annex unit earlier this year in 2018. You know, a guy like that who's spending a lifetime in jail, I mean, what else is he going to do besides plotting to find a way to get out? But hey, when you're planning something that intricate, it pays to get your facts right. you know, like the correct mailing address. Doofus.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
This is an important self-serving promotional bulletin. My book, Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars, is still available. And like the title says, within the pages you'll find some of my celebrity encounters with Oscar winners like Carl Malden, Cloris Leachman, and Christopher Plummer. Emmy winners like Ed Asner, Michael Moriarty, and Lindsay Wagner. Tony winners like Carol Channing and Julie Newmar. A host of TV icons, plus two guys who left their footprints on the moon. Order it now. It's available in hardcover, softcover, and for your e-reader on Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, as well as at my publisher's website at BearManorMedia.com. All links are on our website at TheStuffFile.com. So, buy the book. What are you waiting for? This has been an important self-serving promotional bulletin.
I love you. Now, back to our show.
A Kansas man shot himself in the head with a nail gun as he fell off a ladder but was able to walk to the site of a traffic accident to ask law enforcement for help. Sedgwick County Sheriff's Lieutenant Tim Myers says the man is in critical condition after the accident in Derby, about 10 miles south of Wichita. Myers said the man told sheriff's deputies and a Derby police officer that he was renovating a house when he slipped off a ladder with the nail gun in his hands. When he landed, the nail gun hit him in the back of the head, and the man inadvertently pulled the trigger with his finger. Okay, what I really want to know is just how accident-prone is the community of Derby? I mean, he falls and shoots himself in the head with a nail gun and then calmly walks to the scene of a traffic accident to talk to the cops there. Derby, Kansas must have some sky-high insurance rates. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a Michigan bank robber failed to appear at his sentencing hearing on December the 6th in Macomb County Circuit Court because he was cooling his heels in Toledo, Ohio, after being arrested in connection with another bank robbery. 45-year-old Paul Carta pleaded guilty in October to robbing a bank in May in Utica, Michigan, and was due in court on December the 6th. But on the 5th, the Toledo Police Department said Carta entered a Toledo bank and handed a clerk a note demanding money and warning that he was armed. The bank employee gave Carta an undisclosed amount of money, and he fled the bank. Toledo police took him into custody 11 minutes later at a Taco Bell drive-thru nearby. He was held in Toledo on $50,000 bond. You know, when it comes to bank robbery, if at first you don't succeed, perhaps you should just give it up. Also, kinda sad that his last meal as a free man is at Taco Bell. Yeah. Anyway. Let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? As many of you know, one of the newsletters I enjoy reading is Ernie Smith's Tedium, and we've had Ernie on the show on several occasions. Ernie also has guest writers in his newsletter, and one blogger who goes by the name of Zap Actionsdower had an interesting article on Tedium recently called When a Chain Breaks. It deals with orphaned restaurants that still manage to exist even after their parent company ceases operations. Zap joins us on the line right now from Michigan. Hi, Zap.
Hi, Peter.
Thanks for being on the program. We should mention right off the bat that not only did you write this article, but you have a blog, which is fascinating, by the way, which is devoted to this topic.
That's correct.
How did this first begin for you?
Well, I've always had an interest in kind of seeking out the obscure and obsolete that still exists in the world. And I've had interest in just chain restaurants that aren't in my market as well. And about this time last year, I found myself with some extra time on my hands and wanting to get out and explore a little bit. And I decided that after I was done visiting my family in Kentucky for Christmas, that I'd take a little road trip and see what I could find just kind of in their immediate area. And I made a post about it on my personal Facebook and on my Instagram, and a friend of mine encouraged me to start a blog. And I thought, well, I'll give that a shot. And I wrote about some of my experiences and planned some new ones. And it's almost a year later, and I'm still going strong, still finding places to go, check out, and write about.
Now, was one of your initial reasons for doing this an interest in nostalgia? Because we all have recollections of chains of gone by that were fond for us as children. Was that one of the things that drew you to this initially?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was growing up in central Kentucky, there was a restaurant chain there that I was quite fond of. It was called G.D. Ritzy's. And it was kind of a Art Deco-themed burger joint. They also made their own ice cream on site. And they all disappeared around the time I was in maybe first grade. And a little while later, I discovered that there were still a handful open in other towns. And that trip I made about a year ago was to one of those G.D. Ritzy's locations just to relive a little bit of my childhood. And there are other chains, too, that I grew up with that I try and seek out. Another big one is Taco Tico. And from there, it just kind of expanded from nostalgia from my own experiences to brands that other people have been nostalgic about. And just trying to seek out those kind of secondhand nostalgic experiences as well.
As I read from the article in Tedium, one of the things that can be a bit of a hit or a miss is sometimes these orphaned restaurants keep very true to the nature of the business before it went under, and some of them vary widely from what the original game plan was.
Sure.
Was that a hit or miss situation for you? Was it disappointing going to some and satisfying going to others?
Well, it's always a little bit of a risky proposition if you're going to visit a chain that maybe only has a couple outlets left that have different owners and maybe separated by a considerable amount of geography. I know the example I gave in the Tedium article was the Frost Top root beer stands, where one of them was selling genuine Frost Top root beer and the other was selling Barks root beer. Another great example that comes to mind is Rack's Roast Beef. So there are six Rack's Roast Beef locations left in operation, and the four that are in Ohio all operate the same. They're I characterize them as kind of being like Arby's, but a little bit worse. But the two others, one's in Illinois, the other's in Kentucky, they still have their, 1980s vintage salad bars that the ones in Ohio don't, and they just seem to be better run overall. So that's one particular example. If you want a good Rack's experience, avoid the Ohio locations and head to Illinois or Kentucky.
How does an orphaned restaurant even survive? I mean, is it unusual that they do, and are some chains that have gone under, do they have more orphaned restaurants left behind than others?
Well, there are certainly chains that are completely extinct, but in my experience, it seems like more often than not, there are always more than a few stragglers. And I think the reason for that is the franchising business model. When restaurant chains are expanding and, building their territory, they sell franchises in their business to individual franchisees, and not all franchisees are created equal. And typically when, corporate support for those franchisees ends, most of them either, change their business models or stop doing business altogether. But the best, most profitable franchisees often continue doing business in the same way they did under their corporate parent. And, there are supply chains that dry up. Like, you don't often see the chain's logos on like cups and wrappers like you would on a big chain. But as long as they can maintain their food supply chain, they have all the recipes from the parent company. They already have the building. They already have, all the in-house marketing materials, signage and menus and so on. It's relatively easy for a holdout location of a otherwise defunct restaurant chain to continue business as usual for literally decades after corporate support for them ends.
Is it even possible for people who live in the area to not realize that their restaurant has been orphaned? If their restaurant has been successful and continued, they might not know it's no longer part of a chain.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's a chicken place I went to in Michigan called Maryland Fried Chicken. You can probably guess who they're imitating. But the next nearest location of that same chain is in South Carolina. And I doubt that anyone in Imlay City, Michigan knows that their local Maryland Fried Chicken is part of a larger chain, just with the next outlet being so far away.
What kind of reaction are you getting from your blog? And the reason why I ask that question is I suspect that, you know, once you offer an opportunity to go down memory lane and explain something like a favorite chain, you must get people who are contacting you saying, what about this? What about that? So on and so forth.
I get quite a bit of that. And, you know, sometimes there are places that aren't feasible for me to travel to in the immediate future. And other times there are places that don't quite fit the model of what I like to cover in my blog. But oftentimes I get tipped off on a lot of interesting places, and I've ended up visiting a couple of them just based on reader tips. I keep a spreadsheet of places that I'd like to visit for my blog, and my typical process is once I get a cluster of them within a small enough radius, I make a trip to that area and visit as many as I can in a few days.
You also mentioned in the piece on Tedium that there's, on rare occasions, there's an opportunity for a franchise to be resurrected.
Correct.
The example you have of that in the article?
Yep. So the example in the article I gave, well, there were a couple. There was Roy Rogers. And what it comes down to is, can someone who cares enough to resurrect the chain buy the rights to the name? And Pete Plamondon Sr. was lucky enough to do that with Roy Rogers. He had initially helped set up the brand for Marriott. They were the company that developed the Roy Rogers restaurant chain. And he was a Roy Rogers franchisee for himself for many years. And he actually, after the Roy Rogers was bought out by Hardee's parent company, was able to buy the Roy Rogers name back and resurrect the chain on his own. And, of course, there's my personal favorite, G.D. Ritzy's, whose founder, Graydon Webb, just opened a brand new G.D. Ritzy's earlier this year in his native Columbus, Ohio. He actually sold the rights to the brand back in the early 90s and bought it back recently so he could attempt to resurrect the brand.
In doing your research, have you had a chance to talk to any of the people who were originally involved in said franchisee or chain before it went under?
Sure. So this past spring, I made a trip to every operating G.D. Ritzy's. They stretch from southern Indiana to West Virginia. And in West Virginia, I met the owner of the G.D. Ritzy's there. His name is Sid. And he was nice enough to take me on a tour of the back rooms of his restaurant and tell me stories of him and the business. He's been a G.D. Ritzy's franchisee since 1983 and is one of the few that basically survived the collapse of the parent company. That same trip, I actually got the opportunity to meet the founder of the chain, Graydon Webb, who I mentioned before briefly in Columbus, Ohio. The new Columbus restaurant hadn't opened up yet, but I messaged them on Facebook, and they were nice enough to invite me to stop by and chat for a little while, and I got to meet both Graydon Webb and his son, who is running day-to-day operations at the restaurant with his brother and another gentleman, I believe.
Again, as I mentioned, you have a fascinating blog. It is actionsdour at blogspot.com. People can check that out. It was a great article in Tedium, and people can read that at tedium.co. They can also go directly to your blog, which is at brokenchains.blog. And as I said, it's a great read. Thanks, Zap, for being a guest on the show. That was Zap Actiondour. Again, the site is brokenchains.blog. And you can go to my site at thestufffile.com. Check out the page number for this show, which is show number 0487, and you'll find links to Zap's site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Have you heard the story about the guy who sued Winnebago over its cruise control? According to the story, he set the cruise control while driving and then left his seat to go brew some coffee. Of course, he crashed. And as the story goes, he was mad that the instructions didn't warn him not to do this, so he sued. If you've heard this, you're not alone. It's part of a viral email about five crazy lawsuits that received the so-called Stella Awards. The awards are named after the woman who spilled coffee on herself and sued McDonald's. The problem is, all these stories are fake. Yes, urban legends. It's easy to believe them, though, because so many real lawsuits are just as outrageous. Let's be fair, there's a better place for information about how junk lawsuits are affecting America than through phony emails. To get the facts, visit our website. The information we have is verified and proves once again that truth is indeed stranger than fiction. Our website is centerforamericatv.org.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And as we are approaching the holiday season, it's time to bring up our favorite elf on a shelf, Stuart Nauman.
Well, sorry, Peter. No chocolate chip cookies for you. Or townhouse crackers, for that matter.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. Now that you're right, the holiday season is upon us, and everyone's crowding into the stores or shopping online, and, getting gifts for their friends, families, their loved ones. And you know what? No matter what you buy, and there's always great stuff to buy, I always maintain the best gifts are always books, especially for Christmas or our birthdays, what have you. But around this time of year, on Book Banter, we always do this. I thought we're going to do it again and give some three suggestions of books that you could buy for gifts, or you could hint to your loved ones or friends that you would like as a gift.
Excellent.
We're going to start first with a book called Bibliophile. This is for book lovers because American illustrator Jane Mount, she knows how to appreciate books, both as literary and aesthetic masterpiece. Her website and companion book, The Ideal Bookshelf, takes an individual's list of all-time favorite books and turn them into personalized paintings that resemble how it would look like if they were placed on a typical bookshelf. Now, Ms. Mount has put together a volume that combines the literary and artistic appreciation of great books that bookworms and avid readers alike must have on their bookshelves. It's called Bibliophile. So from cover to cover, it's a colorful, eye-catching celebration of the books we read and loved over the years, the people who wrote them, the places where they are stored and bought, and some various nuggets of literary and book trivia. Now, most of the book is taken up with the recommended books to read in a wide range of genres, such as history, kids' picture books, graphic novels, novels about food, regional cookbooks, novels of the early 1900s, and dystopia, to name a few. Now, each highlighted genre gets the ideal bookshelf treatment with a stack of selected titles, lovingly and accurately illustrated according to current original dust jacket artwork, along with interesting factual tidbits about some of the selected books. My favorite deals with Barbara W. Tuchman's classic 1962 account about the beginnings of the First World War called The Guns of August, especially how it influenced President John F. Kennedy on the way he handled the on-the-brink Cuban Missile Crisis. And Kennedy liked the book so much that after the crisis, he gave up copies to friends and visiting dignitaries. Now, Bibliophile was a book that every avid reader and book lover must own and definitely serves as both a visually stunning coffee table book and reader's reference. It not only shows that the physical book is a thing of beauty, both aesthetically and prose-wise, but opens so many doors to what other titles you haven't heard about before or have wanted to read for so long but never had the time to do so, and explore much deeper into the wonderful world of books and the people who have written and appreciated them.
Okay, and the book again is?
Called Bibliophile by Jane Mount. It's published by Chronicle Books, and it's $34.95.
Suivant next.
Well, Oscar-winning actress Reese Witherspoon. You've seen her in, Walk the Line, Pretty Little Liars, Sweet Home Alabama, Election, great movies. She may be a successful Hollywood actress and businesswoman, and a very successful one at that, but she maintains her Deep South roots and values, which were imparted upon her by her grandmother, Dorothea. Now, she believed, Dorothea, that women should have a combination of beauty and strength like whiskey in a teacup. And that's the name of that she uses these values off screen, in her life, raising her family, entertaining and, yes, even cooking. And it's all put together in lovely detail in his new book called Whiskey in a Teacup. Now, it shows how you can live like a simple down-home life and how to use her approach when it comes to holidays, you know, how to have a Kentucky Derby party, how to have the ideal book club, you know, how to do your home decor, monogram towels. She said, if it doesn't move it, monogram it. And to family road trips, how to do family road trip her way. And also what I liked about it, and you should not look at this part with an empty stomach, it's a selection of Reese's favorite Southern recipes. Like, I see these are look delicious. I wonder how they taste in real life. Cornbread chili pie, pecan-crusted chicken skewers, mint julep, old-fashioned biscuits, to even lemonade stand style lemonade.
But did you check to see if they were kosher, Stuart?
Oh, well, chicken is kosher and chili. I mean, you put ground beef, that's no problem. And what's the problem with, you know, lemonade or mint julep? I could see it getting the MK seal of approval.
Okay.
And there's still, and his book is really beautifully put together. There's plenty of beautiful photos, you know, of the recipes, also of Reese and her family. And it's just as lovely and charming as Reese Witherspoon herself. A beautiful book for the woman in your life, for a friend. It really graces that tree, that Christmas tree.
Excellent. And the book is?
Called Whiskey in a Teacup by Reese Witherspoon. It's published by Touchstone Books, and it's $45.
And did you have another one, or was that it for this?
No, we have one quick one if you're a hockey fan.
Okay.
Bobby Orr, the hockey legend who never seems to rest on his laurels, through a 12-year career in the NHL, he set the bar very high for a defenseman, led the Boston Bruins with 2 Stanley Cups, countless records, and many Art Ross trophies. And he believes that the photograph captures special moments in your life and career. And he delved into the collection of photos, his personal collection of photos, to produce this wonderful book called Bobby, My Life in Pictures, My Story in Pictures. It's a perfect companion to his best-selling memoir, which was published about 3 years ago. And basically, it just these rare pictures show the true form of Bobby Orr on and off the ice. From his home in Parry Sound, where he grew up, to Oshawa, where he started his hockey career with the Generals, to Boston, where he had great fame with the Bruins, and Chicago, where he finished his career with the Blackhawks. Plenty of great photos, including that famed 1970 photo where he just seemed to fly in the air after he scored that winning goal against right. The St. Louis Blues.
Who could forget that? Yes.
Oh yeah. But there's one photo that he has in the book that no one's ever seen before, and it's a picture of Noel Picard and Glenn Hall of the Blues looking dejected moments after that picture was taken. And one thing is interesting is the fans in the stands, where they're looking at the corner of the rink where basically all the Bruins piled on Orr moments after the goal was scored. So it's sort of like that after the fact kind of photo, but that many people have never seen before. And that's what I liked about that. He doesn't show the obvious. He shows some of the rare and not so obvious pictures too.
Excellent.
Oh yeah. And this is a wonderful photographic tribute by the man who defined hockey in the modern era and shows the man who showed the true love of the game for someone who basically had hockey in his blood from the beginning.
And this book is?
It's called Bobby, My Story in Pictures by #4, Bobby Orr, published by Viking Books, and it's $37.
What does anybody get Stuart Nelman for the holidays, either Christmas or Hanukkah anyway? I mean, what book don't you have? Maybe a nice smoking jacket, you know? to read them in, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you this. If you are looking to get me a book for the holidays or maybe for my upcoming birthday, what I must suggest is if you go to a rare bookstore or go to, you know, maybe eBay, a couple of books to add to my Marx Brothers collection, the original edition of Beds by Groucho Marx, which was published in 1930, or his 1942 book, Many Happy Returns, which was published in 1942 by Simon & Schuster.
Well,
can't find them in the store, but you can get them online. So, hint, hint, everybody.
I'm sure that everyone in our audience is adding that to their lists. Stuart, best of the holiday season to you, and thank you once again for doing this. And if people want to find you, how can they go about doing so, especially after they purchase those Marx Brothers books for you?
Well, when after you see me saying, oh, bless you, I'm not worthy, you can, well, you can find me not just in the bookstores here. You can find me in the pages of the Montreal Times, in print every Saturday, or online, www.mtltimes.ca.
Thank you very much, Stu.
Well, you're welcome, Peter, and happy holidays and happy reading for the rest of 2018.
Stuart Nauman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about out of racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. I've got a few more Stuff File news stories that I want to share with you. And, of course, there is indeed an idiot of the day coming your way in just a matter of moments. But, you know, since we were talking about books with Stuart just a moment ago, I have to urge one to remember about my book, which is Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars, is still out there, still available. It's available in dead tree form for those of you who want to order the book and flip through the actual pages. But it's also available in the e-form for your Kindle, so you might want to check it out. You can just order it right now. In the time it takes for me to say this, you can download the book and order it for your Kindle, and then you could read interviews with the folks that I've talked to over the years, many of whom are award-winning actors and actresses. For instance, Oscar winners like Carl Malden and Cloris Leachman and Christopher Plummer, and Emmy winners like Ed Asner and Michael Moriarty and Lindsay Wagner, Tony winners like Carol Channing and Julie Newmar, a host of TV icons like Buddy Ebsen, Bob Denver, Dick Van Patten, Gary Coleman, and the ever-popular Much, Much More. And as the title suggests, two guys who walked on the moon. So check the book out, Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars. It's waiting for you at Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. And let's get back to the stuff here on The Stuff File program, a show that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. A man identified as an elected constable faces a citation and potential fine of up to $600 for allegedly trying to buy guns from people on the street as they were entering the Wilkinsburg Police Department for the annual gun buyback program. Wilkinsburg police say Michael Cornell of Harmony Township is being sent the citation by mail for allegedly violating Wilkinsburg's peddling ordinance. Police say they will notify and consult with the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives to determine whether any other charges should be pursued. Police Chief Ophelia Cookie Coleman wasn't happy to learn a man had been approaching people outside the police department for guns. That was very disturbing, and it was disturbing to the people who were in the line as well, because they were complaining about this person walking up to them soliciting to purchase guns, Coleman said. I don't know how disturbing it was for the folks in line. I mean, I think if I were there in the buyback line, standing in front of the police station, and some guy walked up to me wanting to buy a gun, I would think it was one of two things: an undercover cop not wanting to venture too far for a sting operation, or a hidden camera TV segment for either Jimmy Kimmel or the ghost of Alan Funt. One or the other. A grand jury has handed up an indictment charging two brothers in the death of a Louisiana man who had been wrapped in duct tape and died of asphyxiation. 40-year-old Saleh Omar and 18-year-old Yazan Omar were charged with second-degree murder in the death of 29-year-old Mohammed Mizlini. Mizlini was a former employee of Saleh Omar, who owned a cell phone business in Tarrytown, Louisiana. A detective testified Saleh Omar believed Mizlini wronged him in some financial way. Saleh Omar allegedly lured Mizlini to a vacant store and attacked him. Yazan Omar is accused of holding Mizlini while his brother wrapped his head and body in duct tape. Mizlini was found unconscious. An autopsy determined he died of asphyxia by strangulation and smothering. Wow. How long do you have to hold someone down in order to wrap their body in duct tape? Oh, and by the way, I urge you to type that question into Google search and then wait and see how long it will take authorities to knock on your door. Anyway, those two brothers have got to be very, very, very patient killers. How premeditated was this? Did they always consider death by duct tape? I think they're masking something. Yeah. Anyway, you know what time it is, boys and girls. It's that moment you've all been waiting for. It's time now for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff all presents the idiot of the day.
Dominic Breedlove of Spring Hill, Florida, doomed his chances of landing a job at Kohl's on December the 5th by getting arrested for shoplifting after his interview. Breedlove arrived for his appointment around 3:20 that afternoon and afterwards stopped to browse in the shoe department. A loss prevention officer watching Breedlove told police the suspect went outside to his car, retrieved a Kohl's shopping bag, and returned to the store where he stashed two pairs of Nike athletic shoes worth about $150 into the bag. Breedlove was charged with shoplifting, and the sheriff's office confirmed he was not hired. You figure? Now, why, oh why, would you try to shoplift at the store that you just had a job interview at? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0487. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0487. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check us out on Patreon, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCore in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've experienced another edition of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Now, doesn't that make you feel all warm and fuzzy? Like watching puppies and kittens frolicking in a field of daisies. Like the smells coming from Grandma's kitchen. Like the hallucinogenics you took in the 60s and I'm taking right now. Hello, cartoon birdies. Perhaps I've said too much. Anyway, you know what I mean. Let the glow wash over you and enjoy. Peace out.